This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Look, it's no secret that for podcasters, influencers, and other content creators, branding is a major component in what you do. As a podcaster, I interact with people from all walks of life. Things move fast in conferences, meetings, meets and greets, and keynotes. And those you meet in these events are only long enough to exchange contact information for a later date when things slow down. That is, if they slow down, right? At my age, I can't remember all my social media handles to share at these fast-paced network events. But this dilemma is now a thing of the past with Contap, the first physical link in bio solution. That's right, I can now turn my interactions into opportunity with a simple tap or scan, and just like that, I instantly shared my website, social media handles, store, and podcast with anyone I choose to share. Contap comes in several physical devices. Since I'm always carrying my car keys around, I'm a big fan of the key fob, but no matter what device you choose, key fob, rubber bracelet, QR card, or button sticker, your branding information is quickly and securely shared using NFC technology. Turn everyday interactions into opportunity by sharing what matters. Click the link in the show notes to get 25% off your first purchase by using the promo code REDISCOVER. Be sure to use that link to get your discount. ConTap is short for Connect Tap and is spelled C-O-N-N-T-A-P. And again, the promo code is Rediscover, all in the show notes. Trust me, a lot of my guests are entrepreneurs, coaches, and motivational speakers, and I'm recommending this to them as well. And in the spirit of networking and making connections, you can't go wrong. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. My special guest is a disaster management expert who teaches business leaders how to turn disasters into opportunity by way of innovative, forward-thinking strategies. With 20 years experience in and also having crisis-related certifications, many of them, he's been featured in Forbes and USA Today, among many others. He's also the author of Design Any Disaster, The Revolutionary Blueprint to Master Your Next Crisis or Emergency. Ladies and gentlemen, please, let's welcome Patrick Hardy to the show. Patrick, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you, sir.
Great. Thank you for having me. I look forward to our conversation tonight.
Oh, likewise. I can't wait till we unpack just some great insights that you have in this field of disaster preparedness. Now, To help set the stage here, Patrick, your experience is quite extensive in the FEMA space. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, FEMA's not a space, but I mean, I did a turn within FEMA. FEMA asked me to spend 3 months to represent all of U.S. private industry. Mm-hmm. So I went to Washington and I worked at FEMA's headquarters. I went to the White House a few times to do some briefings. Mm-hmm. It was an incredible experience, and I got to design the first small business disaster preparedness model, which national governments can now use in interacting with small businesses better.
Oh my goodness. And that model can replicate, I mean, just throughout the enterprise, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the issues that's been a problem, has been a thorn in the side of governments for a really long time is, you know, how do we interact with small businesses effectively? How do we interface with them? And it's interesting because there are times where I will talk to local government officials, emergency management agencies, and these agency officials will say, well, Patrick, you know, we know how to work with businesses. I say, so what do you mean? Well, we work with this Fortune 500 business and this Fortune 1000 business and this big company and that big company. And I say, whoa, the way you interface with a big company has next to nothing to do with how you interface with a small business. They are so totally different.
Right.
It's like studying animals and insects and saying, well, they're the same. Right. They're living, they're breathing, they're this, they're that. I go, yeah, not even the same thing. And I'll get very, very quizzical looks when I tell them that. And I'll say, and then I'll start laying out for them the reasons. And they'll suddenly realize that their models were outdated. So finally, FEMA said, hey, listen, you did such an effective job during the British Petroleum oil spill. Do you want to come to DC and do it and write a national policy? And I said, yes, that's what I did.
Oh, man, that is huge. And, you know, I mean, I guess that was an age-old assumption for so long. I guess, you know, just because someone who does business with large corporations and companies can assume that they could sufficiently support a small business. And it sounds like you have given them all of the reasons and more why that assumption is wrong. So thank you for that clarification, Patrick. Now, I want to ask you this question initially right off the jump, okay, to see what your thoughts are. There is a saying that goes, and it can be placed in many different types of context. But one thing I've heard, in my experience at least, is this phrase. And I want to know your beliefs, if you have any beliefs on this phrase or not. It's been said that you don't really know what you or your company or your business is made of until you're hit with the challenge of a disaster. Can you share with us some insights on what you think of that phrase and is there any validity to it?
I went to a business in South Carolina one time and they had said to me, well, you know, Patrick, we're a very well-run organization. We know how to do this. This was a nursing home, a really well-known nursing home, long time. Yeah. If I were to say its name and you lived in South Carolina, you'd know the name of this particular nursing home. So I'm not going to say its name.
Right.
But I show up there and they tell me how well it's managed. And so they say, Patrick, there's no scenario you can come up with that's going to defeat what we're doing. And I say, okay, that's fine. So here's what we're going to do. So I took the notepad I had in front of me and I threw it over my shoulder. And I took the pen I had and I threw it over my shoulder. And I said, there's nothing in front of me, no phone, no nothing. So I'm going to create a drill for you right now that I can guarantee will completely flummox your entire organization. And they said, well, let's see about that. And so I said, no problem. So what I did was I said, we're going to do the drill right now. And I said, do you authorize me to run a drill right now? It's just going to take about 30 minutes, but we'll do a drill right now. And I'll tell you how well you're prepared for disaster. And they said, fine.
Yeah.
So I took all of the employees who were on duty at that time. And I said, okay, who's been here the least amount of time? Mm-hmm. Who knows the place the least? And there was someone in the back who was, you know, obvious what happened. This person was like doing this action. They were, for those of you who can't see me, they were trying to avert their gaze as much as possible. And I said, you in the back, come on up to the front.
That's the one you chose.
And I said, you're in charge today.
Okay.
You're going to run this disaster response. And she said, what disaster response? I said, the tornado that's about to strike in 5 minutes.
Mm.
And I ran a drill just like that. I said, pretend you've had a tornado. Here are the areas that have been destroyed. That wing and that wing there. You're going to take this disaster plan and all the management that they've had, but you're going to be in charge, period. And the managers were like, okay, well, we'll advise her. I said, none of the managers are allowed to participate.
Mm.
And the room went silent.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Now I want you to do it. So here's the reason why I give you that anecdote, Arby, because my attitude about it is we need to empower every single person in a company.
Right.
From the bottom up. If you don't have a disaster plan, you don't have a disaster program that is elastic enough that allows every single person in your organization, every single one, take a leadership position, then guess what? You have made yourself vulnerable to a disruptive activity like an earthquake, like a wildfire, lions and tigers and bears, oh my.
Right, right.
And that will create a disaster in your organization. That mm-hmm. will do it. That tells me everything, because it's fine when there's nothing going on, just like sure. you were saying in the quotation. So to answer your question, you know, very surreptitiously, in the end, the answer is yes. You absolutely have to be able to see the way an organization runs when it is disrupted to really see how effectively management behaves and how well it's actually run.
And I'm a true believer in that, in all capacities of that, Patrick. And I want to thank you for clarifying that and for giving us that true to life example with the business in South Carolina that you were talking about. Now, speaking of businesses, okay, you work with large, small businesses, everything in between, and you know, businesses, as we know in today, nationally and globally, they can run the gamut. They run the gamut with infinite products and services, right, that they provide. And so I would imagine, you know, because of the infinite products and services, that they a disaster may look different between one business and another. But the tools and the methods that you teach, you know, it sounds like they're conceptually applicable to each of these businesses.
I'll just give an example, and I'm going to ask you a question, Aubrey. I'm going to quiz you. I want you to answer my question. Okay, here we go. Sure.
Okay,
all right. So I'm going to give you a scenario, and I want you to sort of just give me an answer. Just give me the first thing, just think about for a second, and then tell me what you think would be the answer. Okay,
gotcha.
Here we go.
All right,
it's a hair salon. Okay, that's easy. But it's in Zimbabwe, which, for those of you who don't know, Zimbabwe is in Africa. Okay. And now they call me and say, we want you to create a disaster program. And by the way, Aubrey, everything I'm telling you is true. I'm not making any of this up. Everything gotcha. I'm telling you is true.
Okay.
They call us up and they say to me, we would like you to do our disaster program. We saw you on Good Morning America. We would like you. And which I don't know how in the world they got
Good Morning America. Right. Right.
But there you have it. And uh-huh. they said, would you be willing to write our disaster program? And I said, absolutely. I would be honored to do it. I told my employees, I'm handling this one.
Yeah,
this is me.
Yeah.
I'm doing this one. Because how many times you get to say you've done a hair salon in Zimbabwe?
That's how right.
I want to get my disaster program for it. What the
yeah,
heck?
Yeah.
So, all right. Now, that's all the information I've given you. Now, I want you to guess what you think is the biggest threat to their business. So what I'm asking you is what do you think, just sort of put it, you know, in very colloquial terms, what is the biggest disaster that you think they face? What do you think?
You know, Patrick, I can't help
just take a guess.
Yeah, well, all right. Well, my guess is just frankly, riots and corruption.
Okay. Inflation. It's inflation.
Inflation.
In fact, I joke around with everybody. In fact, it's actually off camera here, but I actually have on my wall, which they paid me.
Yeah.
They paid me 1 trillion Zimbabwe dollars for that disaster plan. So I tell people all the time, I'm a trillionaire. What can I say?
I like that. And hey, so, you are.
And I have it framed. I never converted. In fact, I asked them, I said, please go to a Zimbabwe bank and get me a $1 trillion note, make sure it's brand new and ship it to me. And they did. And I keep it on my wall and I laugh about it. And you know, people come to my office and things and they always say, what's that? I go, that just tells you I'm a trillionaire.
Yep.
And the reason is because in Zimbabwe, what would be worth $10 today would be worth $100 tomorrow. And $1,000. Right? You see what I'm saying? So in other words, the dollar loses value and therefore the cost of goods goes up. Okay. Right, now, when you work in a salon, you are doing a clear, that's a clear B2C relationship, right? That's about as B2C as it gets, right?
There is.
I mean, you're touching the client. Yeah, exactly. You are, you know your client.
That's right.
But if they're paying you money today, that's only worth 1/10 or 1/100 or 1/1000 or 1/10000 of the value it was yesterday. Yeah. That is a serious disaster because you know what? You can't pay your bills.
No, even you can't.
Though, yeah, they're paying you the same amount they paid you last time.
Yeah.
But now
yeah.
you can't pay your bills. So literally, we created an alternate currency for them that they would use in.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter. Hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
The store. It's a voucher system, really. I mean, we would call it a voucher system. They don't understand what vouchers are. They don't have that there.
Right,
but
right.
what I did was I created a voucher system, which was essentially an alternate currency. And in fact, I have a video coming out. I went to a county in Massachusetts that actually uses an alternate currency.
Yeah.
And so I created a disaster kit using only the alternate currency. It was a lot of fun, actually. But the point I'm making is that there are disasters around the world. It can apply to what the method that I teach people, what I show them, can apply to any kind of disaster. Wildfires and hurricanes and alien invasions and anything you can imagine. Inflation.
apocalypse.
Yeah. The apocalypse, and I've done one, I've done a few of those too.
Yeah.
And every single time I say the method, no matter what, and what I the principle I teach is the same. Prepare for a disaster and you'll never experience one. And that's what I teach.
And on your bio, that is the exact quote that I've read that you have mentioned. And you stand by that. I can tell in the energy of your voice. And and one thing I'm really fascinated by in that story you shared with me, Patrick, about this salon in Zimbabwe is what you mentioned as their number one risk for the highest potential of a disaster is inflation. To me, that goes outside the scope or the realm of the conventional thinking of disaster, right? I mean, at least to me, to someone on the outside, I'm not as immersed in it, obviously, as you are, but to, you know, I mean, when because I'm thinking like, okay, if it's
okay, I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to interrupt you for a second because I'm going to tell you what. You are totally thinking the way most people think.
Yeah.
Because when we think about disasters, we say, okay, it's an earthquake, it's a fire, it's a this, it's a that. But here's what I want to do. I want to change your thinking and I want to change your vocabulary a little bit. Instead of thinking about hyperinflation, okay, as a disaster, I want you to think about it as a disruption. So what I teach business owners is I say anything that is that would disrupt your normal operations. That's what we need to work on. So there was actually this funny commercial of my father was a business continuity professional. So for those of you who don't know, business continuity essentially means you do disaster recovery work businesses. And my father ran the largest university system in the world. He ran the business continuity program for the University of California system, which is the largest in the world.
Yeah.
And one of the things that one day he and I were watching a TV show. This was in the, you know, mid 2000s, I think. Mm-hmm. And so there was a commercial. It was like, I can't remember if it was like UPS or whatever, one of those package services. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the commercial show, it's a small business. Okay. So in the commercial, there's a small business. Okay. And they sell a widget. I don't know what it is. Something, lamps, who knows?
Yeah.
And so they're just about to turn on their online store for the first time. They've done all this marketing and they're talking, saying, we've done all this marketing. Can we turn on? So they turn on the web. So their website, you know, goes magically on. Woo. They're live. Everyone's excited. The celebratory champagne and everything.
Yeah. I think I know where you're going.
And it shows, you know, one order. And they're going, woohoo.
Yep.
And then it shows 100 orders. And they're like, woohoo. And then it says 50,000 orders. And they go, Oh, yeah.
I remember that.
And my dad and I used to laugh at that. I wasn't a continuity planner yet. I was still in college when that happened. Mm-hmm. So it must have been the early 2000s. So, and anyway, my dad, I thought about that commercial years later because I told businesses getting too much business is the same as getting an earthquake. Because if you get 50,000 orders and you don't fulfill 50,000 orders, you will go out of business. That is 100%. You will go out of business.
Yeah, for sure.
Because what'll happen is you can't fulfill. And that was the point of the commercial saying, hey, you need a shipping partner that can help you. But actually, it's interesting because I tell people, can you even do 50,000 lamps?
Right.
That's as big a disruption as anything else, because if you can't fulfill that, you have any idea the negative rage that's going to happen on social media, on Google, no matter what people like Google, hates Google, those Gmail rankings, they impact you.
Yeah.
They will affect your SEO.
You'll be dragged through the mud.
And in social media, you're going to deal with angry people and people thumbing up the angry. That's just, how dare you do this? Yeah. You didn't do this. I was waiting for this for my kid's birthday or whatever. You know what I mean? Every sob story, true or not.
Yep.
That's what people are going to say because people exaggerate online, obviously.
Yeah.
So, and that's why I tell businesses that I want you to stop thinking about disruptions as like things you see in disaster movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, where it's like a category, I'm just making this up, a 12.0 earthquake, which there's no such thing really, you know what I mean? But they show those things and you know what I mean? You know, like that movie San Andreas or whatever, where half of California split off, one's going to Japan and the other one's floating to Nebraska. I don't know.
Right.
The point I'm making is that like, we need to stop thinking about it like that. Instead, think about it as anything that would disrupt your operations to the point where it would negatively impact, it would make your organization weaker. So let me take the next step. I want to redefine for you, Aubrey, and everyone who's listening to this, your definition of disaster. Because an earthquake isn't a disaster. A 10.0 earthquake is not a disaster. It's not. I do this whenever I keynote, and I speak to groups all over the world. And so I was speaking to a group and I said, okay, everybody, how many of you know what a disaster is? And everybody puts their hand up. And I said, okay, great. So I'm going to give you a scenario. You tell me if it's a disaster. And they say, fine. And I say, okay, a 10.0 earthquake in the Bay Area of California. Is that a disaster? And I get every hand raised. And I say, okay, Category 5 hurricane in Florida. All the hands get raised. Okay. And I would tell them, neither one of those are disasters. Neither one. It's only a disaster when you allow it to make yourself weaker. Okay. So because what I tell people is I always say, okay, I say the earthquake and hurricane example. And then I say, well, what if I told you it was the year 20,000 BCE? So 20,000 years before the birth of Christ. And nobody lived in either location. Is that still a disaster? Because all I told you was it was a Category 5 hurricane in Florida.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't say when. Then people go, oh, I guess I wasn't a disaster. I go, that's right. It's not until it interfaces with human management systems. And so in this case, until it impacts our operations, that's not a disaster. So here's how I want you to redefine it. I want you to see a disaster. A disaster only occurs when you are disrupted by an event and your organization is weaker, your family is weaker, you personally are weaker, whatever we're talking about
gets
weaker afterwards. If you're stronger afterwards, guess what? That was not a disaster.
Right.
It was just an earthquake or just a hurricane.
Yeah.
But you make yourself stronger. And there's a number of examples. I talk about them in my book, actually. There's a number of examples. And there's one I'll talk about before we end today. But if you put yourself in a position to be successful, then after the disaster is done, you'll see opportunity where other people don't. Even on your darkest days, in a disaster, just because the community's experiencing a disaster doesn't mean you are. And when you put yourself in that position and you prepare yourself, guess what? The disaster evaporates.
That is crystal clear. And the reason why I say that to you, Patrick, right now is because that very thing you said completely aligns with the quote you just said a few minutes earlier. When you prepare for a disaster, it doesn't happen. You'll never experience one. Right. Yep. So it's in complete alignment with that quote, because when you don't prepare, you are putting yourself in a weaker state. And if that event disrupts you or impacts you, and it's causing you to be weaker by virtue of not being prepared. So all of that totally aligns. And I really, really appreciate, I appreciate that mind shift that you shared. Not so much a disaster, but a disruption, because the disaster, I mean, the event, I'll call it an event. The event, when it impacts you, that's the disruption. That's when the disruption starts, because that event is disrupting your operations. And, you know, for a long time, inflation is an event, right? Just with your Zimbabwe salon story. And just my conventional way of thinking always said, if you have processes and procedures and policies that you carry out in your business, and in something like inflation happens, well, you still have your systems intact. You still have your processes intact. None of that has been impacted or flawed by the event of inflation. But in the mind shift that you have shared, the business itself and its ability to operate and make a profit and to pay their employees has been impacted. So you have to broaden that scope, it sounds like, of what disruption means when it meets with a disastrous event. That's how I'm taking it from you. Is that accurate or close? Or
absolutely. And okay. Here's the story I tell. In 1906, during the massive earthquake in the Bay Area, there was a banker. Okay. And this banker, he ran something called the Bank of Italy. All right. And he was an immigrant, and he started a bank. He came from a semi-wealthy family. I mean, we're not talking about millions of dollars or anything, but he had a lot of money to start a bank, because he wanted to help immigrants from Italy. Because at the time, in the early 20th century, there was a lot of immigration from Italy to the United States, particularly in the Bay Area.
Right.
And I will tell you, by the way, if you ever go to the Bay Area, some of the best Italian restaurants are in the Bay Area. I don't know why that happened. I think it was just because people from Italy saw the weather there and said, wow, this place is perfect.
Yeah.
Because you'll get some of the best cioppino, some of the best bolognese you'll ever have in your life, and the best cannoli I ever had. And I've been to Italy. Best cannoli I ever had was in San Francisco.
Really? I love bolognese.
Wow. Goodness, man. It's incredible. But so here's what I was saying, which was, after the earthquake, his bank was reduced to rubble. Mm-hmm. But he called all of his employees and told them to come in. Mm-hmm. And he took the safe and he pulled the safe out from the rubble of the bank. He set out a table, put out a chair, pulled out a ledger book. This is before the internet, so, you know, all that. And he took out a pen. And every single person who came up to him and asked for a loan, he opened the safe up and he gave them money.
Wow.
And all he requested was a handshake in return as a promise to pay the loan. No collateral, you can take my house if I don't pay it back.
Yeah.
And he did that for every single person until he ran out of money. Wow. Of all the money he loaned, 98% of it was paid back.
Is that 98%. Right?
And in fact, he it had such an impact on the community that he would do that, because he continued to do that. Every time he got money back, he re-loaned it out to other people during the earthquake when there was no other money.
Incredible.
And you know what he did? After the earthquake was over, he decided to rename his bank. He didn't want to call it Bank of Italy anymore.
No.
He decided to call it Bank of America.
That's the story. Bank of America. Incredible story. And
he took what was reduced to rubble, where other people saw what was destroyed. He saw what was revealed. That's how I challenge people. I say, yes, it's sad what happened, but you know what? This revealed something to us.
Yeah.
We don't have to see this as a dark day.
Yeah.
We can see this as a day where we can now do something different. Maybe we decide we want to go back to the way things were. That's fine. But we're going to build it stronger. We're going to be better people. I don't like it when people decide to be victims for years and decades.
No, not at all. You don't have to be that. No.
You can be strengthened. Then you know what suddenly happens? What happened to that banker? His name was AP Giannini, and he was, in fact, the founder and CEO of Bank of America.
Yeah.
And he saw an opportunity where everyone else saw doom and gloom. And he saw an opportunity not only for the business, not only for himself, but for the community at large. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it means to really take this opportunity, take that disruption and turn it into a success and not a disaster. And Aubrey, that's what I tell people. That is how you get through these things. And that's how you become stronger in the end.
100%.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar. I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
I completely get it, Patrick. That is how you encourage other businesses and show them how to see the opportunities in those events, and by just adjusting their lens, right, and not let victimhood define who they are, let it be their story or anything like that. Man, that is fantastic, because once you realize that, just as he did, then amazing things happen after that. And then I couldn't help but think that there's some sort of, I don't know, energy and mindset shift that he may have indirectly have done by example to those that he loaned money out to and those employees and so forth. In doing that, everyone else saw doom and gloom. He saw an opportunity. He took action. And there were people positively impacted by that action. They saw that. They were part of that. He led by example. And then energy feeds energy to where he's getting 98% of his money back. And of course, building community. So it can't help. I mean, it can't do anything. It can't do anything worse than uplift a community, uplift a people, uplift a town, just like it did in the Bay Area. What an incredible story. I mean, the stories you've been sharing in this conversation, Patrick, has been totally engaging, you know, and captivating for not just my ear, but for the listener's ear as well. So no doubt whatsoever. Now, I want to talk to you about designing disasters. What is the fascination or the idea behind that? I mean, is the purpose to design a disaster in order to kind of put yourself as a person or a company or a business in a situation where you enact the walking through the disaster?
It's really more for me because my book title is Design Any Disaster. Yeah. And the reason why I call it that is because I say to people, look, the disaster doesn't have to control you.
Yeah.
Okay. But what you have to do is you have to design it. You have to design it in a way where you are in control of it. Because people say, design a disaster. How do I do that? And I go, well, we are going to engineer your life. We're going to engineer your small business. We're going to engineer fill in the blank to where it doesn't occur at all. Because then you have designed the disaster totally away.
Yeah.
Gone. and all you have left is success. Once I have stripped that away, I have stripped away the negativity. I've stripped away the rubble. I've stripped all that away. All we got left is that safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you going to do with it? And how are we going to handle it? So you notice I didn't say, well, he, you know, took the money and he, you know, spent it on his own bank to build it back up. He didn't do that.
Right.
He
right.
People. Because yeah. He said, listen, I don't have the bank left. I mean, the bank itself has been reduced to rubble. No yeah. problem. That's okay. Yeah. Because I'm going to take the safe and I'm going to loan the money out to people on the street.
Yeah.
On the street.
Wow.
Right. And so, and as a matter of fact, if I want to go back to the example with the salon in Zimbabwe, mm-hmm. the voucher system actually made them stronger because you know what? People said, I have a fixed rate of value. So no matter what happens to the Zimbabwe dollar, I always, always, always can afford a haircut at that salon.
Within the walls of the business. Yeah.
Right, because I have this voucher yeah. that can only be used with that business.
Gotcha.
And
gotcha.
By doing that, you see what I mean? And so I told them, I said, give out the vouchers. Just use the vouchers.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Don't use Zimbabwe dollars at all. Just
okay.
abolish them.
Okay.
And you know what they found? By doing that, it allowed them to continue to convert money. Because then when the vouchers came in, then they could essentially cash them out and make it so that they had the money, the value of the haircut, whatever that was.
Right. And they're securing patronage because no other place can.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly right. It's like saying you're guaranteeing yourself repeat customers. To think about it. Right. Every voucher you give essentially guarantees you're going to have a customer come back.
Man, I tell you, I mean, I got chills just thinking about this, man. I mean, it's genius. It's absolute genius because not only is it countering the inflation effect, right? But it's placing that business in a more secure position for when this inflation bubble kind of, you know, they get on the other side of that hump, so to speak, and they continuously will have customers because of the voucher concept, you know, of different services they can still get no matter how inflation goes up and down. That voucher will give them this service at this business. Absolutely genius. So in that type of example and many other examples, I'm sure that you have, Patrick, and some that you've shared with us, I want to ask for you, and I guess it depends on, you know, who you're asking or what perspective, but when a business goes through a disaster, how is success measured, right? I mean, is it measured by how soon they're back up and operational? Is it measured by, you know, the minimal outage time? Is it measured by how many or how quickly disaster teams respond? I mean, what are the metrics or measurements that helps determine success or a business having gone through an event?
You're right. It really varies. It depends on the kind of business. It depends on the metrics that they use for success. But whatever those metrics are for success, that's what I use. So
that's what you use. Gotcha.
So if we ran a nursing home, okay, mm-hmm. we would not mm-hmm. only be measuring success based on dollars, but on human life, right? We want the fewest right. number of people right. as casualties, right?
Right.
That's different than if you are a tech startup.
Right.
How fast can I get my internet servers back up? What do the nursing home care about the stupid servers? Yes, they will yeah. need them, but not in an immediate disaster when human life is on the line. But if you
right,
if you
right.
if you run a tech company that makes emojis for a living, creates an emoji app, you know what I mean? No, there's no yeah. human lives at stake there, really.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
You have you're not gonna save any lives with that.
You just don't yeah. go home. What are you gonna do the app from home? You know what
yeah.
I mean? So whatever that metric is, that's what I evaluate and that's what I use because I want people to be able to tell me what does success look like for you? Because whatever that is, the solution's going to be tailored to it because I want to recover you as fast as I possibly can, but I have to do so on your terms, not
right.
mine,
right.
your terms. And so I always do that because I want people to realize I'm not trying to force a solution on you. What I'm trying to do is saying, what solutions are available to us and how can I be creative?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't do that unless I know what the metrics are for success. But thankfully, I've now worked in 50, 60 industries now. So, you know, there tends to be some commonalities.
That makes sense. I can only think that you would run into those commonalities after so many different business types and industries that you've worked with and clients. And I know there's many, many more out there. This has been absolutely fascinating, Patrick. I mean, you have introduced a whole different way of thinking, at least in my mind, with my limited experience in disaster and disaster recovery, and the conventional way of thinking when it comes to an outage or disaster. And additionally, when it comes to the currency, what is your currency? It may not be dollars in sales for a business. In most businesses, it is. But in certain businesses, we're talking about human lives. You know, that is a major, major metric, you know, in a lot of other industries. So, you know, that's these things broaden the way we think about what is truly a disruption. What does it mean to us? And just how do we respond the right way to respond to it? You know, think of it as a disruption, not a disaster. It impacts you when you're in a weak state, if you let it, and disaster preparedness is the way to go. So knowing that this show here, Patrick, is mostly, I interview a lot of businesses, okay? But I always want to see if we can talk about a way that business concepts, business principles in any space, in this space, disaster preparedness, can be and is relatable to the personal sides of our lives, our home life, our family, okay? Having this type of mindset for any type of event or disruption that may happen in our homes, okay? Can you speak a little bit to the relatedness or the applicability, if that's a word, is it applicable for what you teach in terms of mindset? You know, and vocabulary and all that stuff from the businesses that you coach and that are your clients to say someone dealing with major, major disruption in their personal life.
Well, it's the same kind of concept, really, which is I say to people, if you prepare for that disaster, you're not going to experience one. The vocabulary is a little different because when I talk to businesses, I'm essentially talking about processes, people, profit, right? The three things, right?
Yeah.
When I'm talking about families, I look at things like, you know, how do we evacuate people? How do we ensure that we recover afterwards?
Right.
How do we ensure we have, you know, we get our jobs, all those things.
Yeah.
So like the example I give, and I joke around with audiences all the time. I would say, listen, you know, what's the greatest thing that could ever happen to you in your entire life? You know, what's one of the greatest possible things that could ever happen to you? Winning the lottery. You know, what is one of the worst possible things that could possibly ever happen to you in your whole life ever? Winning the lottery.
Winning the lottery. Yeah.
Because it's a disruption to your life.
Yes.
And I work with financial advisors because I do work with a lot of high net worth clients. And yeah. I worked with a couple of people who won the lottery before. I had someone who won the Powerball. He won some billion number anyway. And the point being was that the financial advisor said, you know, this is not someone who understands how to transition his life.
Yeah.
From the way it was to where it is now. And that was really smart. That was really smart for that person to admit. A lot of people won't don't. He did. And that was smart. So, and the point I'm making is winning the lottery, coming into a lot of money because, you know, Uncle Jim, who was a, you know, multi-zillionaire, passes away and you get a bunch of money. That's going to affect you. That is going to disrupt you.
Yes.
So is it going to make you stronger or weaker afterwards? Well, that depends. How well did we prepare for it?
Right.
And if we weren't prepared for it, that's fine, because now we're going to be in a place where we need to respond to it.
Yes, right? 100%.
And so 100%. That's what I teach. So yes, the vocabulary is a little different, but in the end, because people wouldn't say winning the lottery is a disruption. Well, it is.
It is a disruption. Yeah. Yeah.
But ultimately, I say something that significantly modifies how you do daily life. So whatever disrupts that.
Yeah.
That is a disaster of some kind. And the larger ones are, you know, those disruptions then can either turn into a disaster if they allow it to make you weaker, or they can turn into tremendous successes because you make yourself stronger afterwards. Then it's not a disaster anymore, because then it's like, wow, this really turned into a blessing, or this turned into a wonderful wave of opportunity for me. And that's what I teach. And I reinforce that with families all the time. I say, I don't care if you're rich or poor. I can empower you for any disruptive event, anything really. And I've done it because, and what I teach now is I talk about a different system. I'm trying to change the way that we view disaster preparedness, because instead of focusing on a written plan, I have them focus on a backpack. And so, and there's a method and a system I've been using for almost 20 years with my clients that I'm now showing to people and teaching people how to take control so that it does not ever turn into a disaster, even if it's one for someone else.
Gotcha. I may have asked you this question before, Patrick, in a different form or using different words, but I mean, what are your thoughts on just the word disruption itself? I mean, it seems to traditionally have a bad connotation to it, but it's not always necessarily bad or mean bad things. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, I worked with a lot of startups. I mean, if you look, and for those of you who have ever, those of you business people who've ever, you know, if you read the Wall Street Journal or you deal with Silicon Valley in any way, they always say this: I'm trying to disrupt an industry. Okay,
right.
They're doing that because they believe the status quo, the basis that we have now for industry X or whatever, we need to disrupt that somehow. So the question is are they going to make that industry stronger or weaker? So I'll give you an interesting example. For those of you who know, there's a YouTuber named Jake Paul. Okay. He's related to Logan Paul, who's also a very famous YouTuber. I think he's fallen out of favor nowadays because of some of his stunts. But what's happened is Jake Paul became a boxer.
Yep.
And he's been, as a matter of fact, he was on Netflix because he took on Mike Tyson and he took on these other guys. But the point he was trying to make is, and I think a lot of people miss what Jake Paul is trying to accomplish. He's trying to disrupt boxing in a different way. What he's trying to do is is he fighting fighters that are really not in the best of shape? They're not in the best of shape.
Over the hill, yeah.
They're over the hill, or they're pulling punches. It's obvious. For those of you who watch the Mike Tyson fight, I'm not making any qualifications, but I read Mike Tyson's autobiography, and I've studied a lot of his fights. I did that in college. I did a paper on Tyson. I did a 30-page paper on Tyson and his fighting techniques.
Yeah.
And anyway, what I saw on Netflix definitely raised an eyebrow, regardless. Doesn't matter whether it was, quote, fake or not. What Paul is trying to do is he's trying to disrupt boxing so that it goes from being what we know now is this authentic, we're beating each other's brains out, to a WWE style event. So almost like a wrestling event where we're physical with each other, but in the end, nobody really gets hurt.
Yeah.
Is this the value of the event itself?
Yeah. Entertainment.
Right. So when I talk about disruption, that's what I mean. Something that modifies the norm. So you run a small business, like in the UPS commercial or whatever that was.
Yeah.
5 orders, 10 orders, 50 orders, 100 orders, 10,000 orders, and then 50,000 orders. And then we're just like, oh, we're not going to get
that. Right.
Right. So so the question becomes, whenever a disruption occurs, I always ask people, you have two choices. Do you want it to become a disaster, or do you want it to become a success and an opportunity? Mm. It's up to you. It's one of those two. Those are the two choices. So if you want to turn it into an opportunity, then you know what? The disaster disappears. But you have to look past it. What I write in my book is this: when you look at something, when a disruptive event like a massive earthquake occurs, it's not what's been destroyed. It's what's been revealed to you.
Mm.
What has been revealed during COVID? I did this all the time. I talked to whole groups of people, of course, over Zoom. And I would say to them, you know, cause people be like, oh, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. I'd say, look, you know, all those times, remember all those times where you said, you know, I would really like to think about maybe changing careers or maybe moving somewhere else.
Right.
Well, you know, and I never have the time. I don't have the chance to do it. Guess what? Now you have the chance to do it.
Now you do. That's right.
Now you do. Yeah. Because you have a chance, because you know what? There's no guarantee that your business is going to be in business tomorrow. The people who you work for may close the company. And I can tell you that it's sad, but I can tell you it happened hundreds. I'm not talking about dozens of times, hundreds of times where businesses basically left employees in the lurch and then said, well, we're closed up shop. That's it.
Wow. That's horrible.
I actually worked in the RV industry. I did a lot of work. I've done a lot of campgrounds and RVs in California, a lot of disaster programs.
Right.
And what happened after COVID was this: a big corporation, not going to say its name, a big corporation during COVID went to all the banks and said, listen, I want to collect $200 million from investors, from bank loans, from investment groups and investment banks, angel groups, and they collected $200 million and they proceeded to buy almost all the RV parks up and down California that were basically viable. Because you know why? They would walk up to people and say, hey, listen, you know, times are bad, COVID's awful, yada, yada. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll buy your property for $800,000. I will write you a check for $800,000. Mm. I'm going to hand you the check, and you're going to hand me the keys and you're going to walk away.
Wow.
What do you think? And how many people do you think, Aubrey, took them up on that? Tons. Because if you're in a disruptive state, that big company, which we all want to say, gee, they must have been the evil villain in that story. They're not the evil villain. They were the ones who said, listen, I'm going to offer you 800 grand for your property. You hand me the keys and you go to Barbados. Enjoy your retirement. Go see the grandkids. Bye-bye now.
Right, right.
They went to banks who said, we're going to default. People are going to default on their loans. And they did.
Yeah, yeah.
Or investment groups that said, we have no companies to invest in. So this company said, listen, let's just pool all this money together. They pooled $200 million. Yeah. And they just went up and down California. I know, because I got a lot of clients that got bought out.
Wow.
Tons of clients. They just got bought out. And that was it. Ended up turning out to be some good contract, because I ended up getting, I now work with the three top RV and campground companies in the United States.
Oh, that's great.
They basically said, your disaster plans are great. We're not going to write them anymore. Do you want to just handle them? Here's our entire portfolio. And we did it.
Wow.
So, but you see how that transition, see how everyone's happy, because the big company, they get the property. The people who were disrupted in COVID, they get money to go to retire. Money.
Banks are happy. And man, no. So no, they weren't the villains. No.
But to get back to your question, it's that what's sort of this definition of this disruption? And my answer is anything that breaks the baseline, and it may end up being a good thing. Because if somebody says, I'm going to buy your business for 800 grand, fine by me. Well, not me,
but what's bad about that? Right. I mean, 800 grand.
Yeah, 800 grand. Great. Fantastic. I get to go and spend time with the grandkids. Yeah. I can retire. I wasn't planning 100%. To retire for 3 or 4 more years, but you know what? I don't want to get sick. I'm done here.
There you go. Start early while you can, you know, if you can start early.
Because then that disruption became an opportunity. COVID was not a disaster for that RV park. The new company got what they wanted, money, and I'm sorry, a property, the owners who were there. That was not a disaster for them, because they got paid and they got to go retire. Yep. Everyone's happy.
Yes.
It works out.
Yes. Man, I love these examples you share, man. They're so vivid and they're so illustrative. I mean, you know, you can really paint the picture in your mind's eye as you are telling these stories, true stories, you know, that are very, very good examples of the very questions and very topics that we've been covering here, Patrick. How can the listeners follow you, learn more about, you know, just the great work that you're doing with disaster preparedness, and pick up a copy of your book?
Well, go to disasterpatrick.com. I can actually say that I'm very excited. I am now fully a content creator now. So on my YouTube channel, this year, we are going to be putting up a ton of videos. So, for example, I don't know when this show airs, but this we are recording this in early January. And every single day between now and the end of the month, I'm actually putting up one and sometimes two videos a day. There's actually a 30-day challenge that I'm giving to each one of you who are hearing this, because I'm going to create for you a disaster backpack from start to finish. I will teach you what to put in it, what to skip, how big, every question you need to ask. And then on the weekends for those 30 days, I give you little things to try. I say, train yourself by doing this. So for example, on one of the days I say, what I want you to do is I want you to turn off all the lights in your house. And I want you to only use the flashlights that are in the disaster backpack that you've chosen, because that's the only way you're going to know if they're going to work for real. Right. So I'm doing that, and I'm doing some amazing challenges. You probably know this already, Aubrey, which is I evacuated 240 cats in 90 minutes. I did that a couple years ago. And then last year I did CPR for 28 hours straight. So, and I set a world record by doing that. And so I'm putting that video up. And then this year, the challenge I've taken on is I am building the world's first FEMA rated hurricane shelter made entirely out of Lego bricks. And what I'm going to do is we're going to build it. We've designed it. We're building it now. And then we're going to test it. And then what we're going to do is we're going to take it to the University of Maryland to their wind tunnel. Their wind tunnel goes up to 200 miles per hour. And we are going to put this structure up against Category 5 hurricane winds. It is going to be an amazing. And we're going to do that live on YouTube. It's going to be an incredible year. The Disaster Patrick YouTube page is just going to be incredible. The channel is going to be on there. Please like, subscribe, and comment on there. I would love to hear about other challenges you want me to take on. Because on my YouTube channel, I want to take on the most difficult, the hardest, the craziest disaster challenges that you could possibly come up with for me to do. And I've got so many great videos coming out, and I think you guys would absolutely love it. It'll be a lot of fun. So disasterpatrick.com, or go onto YouTube, Disaster Patrick, and check out my channel.
Oh man, you're bringing the energy, man. I mean, I feel it in what you're saying, and so does the listeners. Bring it on. Patrick has taken on the biggest challenges. He's mentioned those that he's already done. He's mentioned world records that he set, and he's talking about some amazing, amazing feats that he's working through building today with buildings based on Lego bricks that he will have in a wind tunnel, okay? Going up to over 200 miles per hour for hurricane level winds to see how this structure withstands those winds. A lot of amazing stuff. You heard him from himself, ladies and gentlemen, disasterpatrick.com, and go to his YouTube channel, Disaster Patrick. Subscribe, like, view his videos, participate in that 30-day challenge that he is challenging you for. Ladies and gentlemen, and look, I don't care if you are a business owner or not, okay? These things apply, as Patrick and I have discussed earlier. These things apply. Some of the challenges that he give you out of the backpack, you can apply and actually do within the confines of your home. So please, 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 you will learn so much from this, including having a whole new mindset shift and outlook on life and how you respond to adversity in your life whenever adversity hits. Patrick Hardy, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. You have been an absolute delight to have. You are a force for good in the universe. And I truly appreciate your storytelling, the supportive examples you've given, and the clarity you've given us with the mindset shift and vocabulary between disasters and disruption. Thank you so much, Patrick. I hope we can stay in touch and bring you on the show, hopefully in the future, so we can maybe discuss some future advancements in your crusades.
I want to thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed this conversation immensely, and I just I'm really hoping, for those of you who heard this, I hope that this help made you feel like you can do this. And if you end up buying my book, you will see this. I put this in the very beginning. I said, for those of you who live in the quote unquote age of disasters, you got this. And that's what I feel for each of you who are here. You don't have to experience a disaster. You totally got this on your own. Aubrey, it was a pleasure. I enjoyed it very much. I look forward to future conversations. Trust me, there's a ton of great challenges. I'm doing one on a pirate ship. I'm going to Antarctica. I've got some amazing, amazing things. And so please have me back, and we can talk about those adventures And we'll get to talk about the lessons, which is the most important part, the lessons of those challenges and how they can make ourselves more prepared for disasters so that we never, ever, ever experience one.
100%. 100%. We will definitely keep in touch and bring you back on the show, Patrick, for updates on that and a lot more. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And look, you may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, we're never alone. Hope is always around the corner. And I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know, someone you love, who needs motivation, inspiration, and support. And you know, when it comes down to it, we're all just roadies on this journey of life. But it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Roads Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.